from the sidewalk down in there. And of course, down in the basement, he had barrels of pickles and a lot of storage, you know, on hand. And so anyway, sometime in the summertime, them doors would be open, go down there and had salt pork in the barrels, you know, whatnot. Well, again, that was Arthur Mobus. John Mobus and his wife came from Germany. They lived up to East Warren on a farm. They had quite a few children. And there was Fred and John, and quite a bunch of them. John Arthur was one of quite a, well, thought he was quite wise, you know, that like. And so, anyway, Dad had traded and got this horse. I don't remember who, no man, but she was a natural pacer. She could pace, go like a dickhead. But she, I don't know, she got a few years on her, but she was, had been built when Dad got her, and she was temperamental. She might be driving right along, going right along, she happened to take it in her head she's going to stop, she'd stop. And if you asked her to go too early, she might go backwards or, you know, so the thing to do, so she at her age, Dad didn't try to break her of it, would just sit and wait a few minutes. When she watched her and when she got asked if she wanted to go speak to her, and she'd go off and she'd be all right. Well, and he'd had her for quite some time. And one time Dad was, he used to take her when he in the spring year, drive her, she's a good driver, ground, and he used to take it to harning board and all this stuff, ground in the spring to harning cattle and doing that kind of stuff. He was coming up through one late in the evening, been down doing way down there doing animals, and just come up to Fort Waitsfield Village. She was coming right along all at once, she stopped quick. Of course, Dad knew what she was going to do, and somebody was on the sidewalk, and they looked, they wondered, and of course, quick thinking, Dad says, right off to this fella, he, you know, he said, you know if anybody's got any India wheat for sale? It just come to his mind, you know. And that fella, whoever it was, Dad, I don't think knew. And he thought of me, and he says, well, no, I don't offhand. By that time, Dad see her ear, and I like, well, thank you, spoke to her, and she went along. Nothing ever happened. Well, went along, so sometime Arthur came up there and was looking for a driving horse. And he said there's some of the younger people had pretty good traveling horses, and he'd like to be one, so he'd go out and pick him up behind him, and he couldn't drive by him. Well, Dad said, I got this man here, it's a natural pacer. And he says, she'll ain't many people to go by her either. He says, she's probably before I got her been raised or something, because she hears the horse trotting up behind her. He says, she gets on the bit and she wants to go. And so he looked her over, and Dad hitched her up and drove her, and that like, she would hitch in good and stand nice, that like. And so Dad told him all about her. And Dad said, if you drive up somewhere else with her and stop her, and she happened to want to go before you get ready, he says, be very easy, don't yank her, and just say whoa to her, they'll wait. And he says, you won't have any problem. Well, he bought her, and he had her quite a while, and he was going, and his wife, her name was Mabel Robinson, George Robinson's daughter. And they Saturday night, they came down to Warren, and she, Mabel, went into the Bragg store to get something. And he was stopped out on the road. And, well, she was busy, and they waited quite a while. Finally, she got sick of it, and she started up. Well, he was imparting that, like, instead of doing like Dad told him, he give her a yank with the line and set her back and said, whoa. Well, she stopped. Just then, Mabel came out and got into the buggy. And she started up a little while she was getting in, and he yanked her once more, and she started going backwards. She got in the buggy and she started backwards. He cramped her and backed them down all of them steps right into the cellar, big doors, knocked over barrels of pickles and that like. And then she got scared and she headed out. Of course, when them wheels hit the stone steps, they didn't go up over good, and she broke her whippery. And the way she went, took a line down his hand, she went off, and they were sitting down in Bragg's halfway out of the cellar in the buggy. They had the two of them, the horse had gone down the street, running to the lines, hanging, the tugs and dragging, and the way she went. And there was quite a laugh around telling about he was going to show that horse how to take her place. That was funny. They knocked over a barrel of pickles and one thing another down the cellar. And then she decided she'd get out there and she started. That was kind of funny, quite a talk of a telling her for a few days.
What did Bragg think of it all?
I don't remember. I know he was probably kind of disgusted because knocked the pickles over and they heard the jam go over. When he got around that, of course, the barrel of pickles was all over the cellar bottom. And there was a salt pork barrel knocked over too. Of course, the brine ran out of that and some of the pork didn't go out and stayed in the barrel, but kind of upset things quite a little bit. But that was Arthur Mobus.
You said they came from Germany? They came like the Irish brothers?
Yeah.
Came and then got work up in Warren?
Yeah. They lived, made their home there, and you heard me speak of Arthur Hartshorn and Frank Hartshorn. They lived up there. Well, Frank Hartshorn's wife was a sister, I'm pretty sure, of John Mobus. It came over from
Germany,
yeah.
Probably late 1800s?
Yeah, oh yeah. And they had the farm up to East Warren, the barn built now, but they had a farm there in East Warren. Farm there, and they grew up their family there. And Fred Mobus, the younger one, later years, he was in the World War I, Fred was, and when he came back, he took over the farm and run the farm there for a number of years. Nice people. And some of them handed down. I've got a great niece that married a Mobus that lived down in Springfield, Vermont. One of the Mobuses hand down. And so this was funny. I don't know if I told you, Frank Hartshorn, his wife was German, and she was tighter than they say than a bark to a tree. And they bought I don't know what I told you about it, Frank buying a first automobile, Ford touring car. It would be a Model T Ford. And of course, they never went too far. He learned to drive, Frank did, and he used to go to, as far as he ever went, was out to Montpelier to visit his brother Art, and then used it to go downtown shopping. So this particular day, this is true, because Frank told it to my dad. And he was a nervous fella. Frank was awful nervous, jittery fella. Yes, and you know, and that kind of stuff. And a lot different than Art. But an awful good, honest man and wonderful man, and hard worker. And he told my dad, he said, they were going downtown. And she never rode in the front seat with him. She always rode in the back seat. So they were going down by the Collins flat, they call it, the neighbor's Collins flat going along, and he said to her, he said, when you get downtown, he said, I got to put in 5 gallons of gas and a quart of oil. And she spoke up to him, she says, my gosh, she said, every time we go out, it's 5 gallons of gas and a quart of oil, quart of oil. She says, even though that's all we're doing is spending money for oil. Frank says, I stopped that car, he said, right in the middle of the road, he said, and I turned around, look here, lady. He said, we aren't going to spoil a $500 car for 25 cents worth of oil. No, he says, indeed we aren't. No, he says, I just tell her for other reason. He says, we aren't going to do it. But imagine he's telling about it, and he stopped right in the middle of the road and turned around and turned the back seat and told her that.
And she was John Mobus's sister.
She was John Mobus's sister.
And they came over from Germany.
Yeah.
Now, are there any of the Mobuses left in Warren?
I don't think is. One of the Hartson girls, of course, she was still a hand down, married to Frank Rich. The boy took my place from operating in Linden Gas Electric Company. She's still up there summers.
She comes up summers, yeah. I was going to try and interview her.
Yeah, and they have a home down in Lynn, Mass. And I guess she goes down there winters, and then she comes up to Francis. And she comes up there and spends the summer. I guess it was a year ago last summer. I was all that way, and I went up and visited with her for a while, and she was awful glad to see me.
I thought she might have some of our Hartshorn's songs.
Yeah, I imagine she will. Yeah.
Now, she was his sister, right? Or niece?
Niece. You see, Frank, her father...
Was Frank.
Was Frank.
I see.
Yeah.
Right.
And but I don't think it ended the moment it left there, as I recall. But there's Alan Mobus that married my niece, my great niece, down in
Springfield.
But his father's gone now, and Fred's gone, and Charlie's gone. I don't think there's any of them left. I don't think there is. I don't know. But.
Well, it seems to me like there were Irish there, there were Germans.
Yeah.
Sort of Scots, English maybe.
Yeah, they were quite a lot of different ones. Well, back then, they'd come over to this country, not around, and they'd settle in the different places and buy a little farm and made good citizens and good workers. Yeah. Trying to think. Of course, some of the old fella used to go, Pinky Heath, used to go into Bragg's store and tell all about shooting all those animals right in the eye, you know, I told you about that. And also about the time that he said he went out and shot a porcupine that weighed 365 pounds, didn't I, old woman? She said, no. He said, what do you know about? You wasn't there.
You tell me about the porcupine, but you didn't tell me about him shooting in the eye.
Oh, yes, he was always bragging. He was a good marksman, but he was always bragging downtown, going to the store and sit around. When you go deer hunting, that like, you don't have to get right up close to him. You get near enough so you can see the eye. He said, that's all you have to. He says, shoot everything right in the eye. And he was always telling about shooting everything off in the eye, you know. And well, I don't think he shot them all. And then I told you about his shooting flies in the eye. Didn't I?
I think you did.
Yeah.
Tell me that one again.
Well, he used to make baskets, pound out the ash with a hammer and get to make beautiful baskets, half-peck bushel baskets for farmers. He used that like. And he had a shaving horse as a thing that you could put these things into and put your press foot down the hole of them. You take a shave, draw a shave, and shave a little strip down the way you want them. And Dad, we had a pasture that we rented down there, Blair's. And we used to Sunday ground the different ones, go to different patches and give them salt. You salt them once a week, all loose salt, you know, spread around rocks. And so we stopped in, Dad always liked to stop in and visit with me. I forget what it is, Oscar Heath, but they called him Pinky. And so I was in there, and here was this sawhorse, which was kind of quite a place, pretty dirty, and a lot of flies around that like. And that sawhorse woodwork was all full of little bullet holes. And Dad says, what's all in? Well, he says, flies get in here. He says, and I put a little molasses, he says, on there. He says, and then I shoot him on my little 22. He had a little pistol. Dad says, shoot him right in the eye. And he said, yes. And then he thought, he said, squash him all to devil. That tickled me. I was a young kid. He'd come on blind about that, shooting flies in the eyes. Then he thought Arthur had shot 2 months. He says, yes. And he says, squash them all to devil.
Now, would he talk about that in the general store?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, he'd tell them all that kind of stuff. And he went out and he already shot a deer. And if I want to be outlined, I want to take tape, but to be out of reach of any ordinary gun, you know, and he saw the deer, but the sun was just right, and he could see his eye shining, and he shot him right in the eye. And, well, you know, that's a pretty good shot. And then that way, he says, you never ruin any meat, either, he says. These people go out and shoot them in the body, and I'm like, don't eat that, he says. Wait till you can get them to look, turn around and look at you with the eye.
So, in the story, there would be sort of tall tales.
Oh, yeah. Well. Yeah. Some of them old fellas tell some of the darnest stories, you know, that they want a word of truth in it. But Dad, you'll say they tell them so much that they get so they believe in themselves.
And that was the fun of it.
Yeah, and then I told you about the fella that picking blackberry and the bears, he couldn't run because the snow was so deep, didn't it?
Picking bears in the snow? I mean, picking the...
This was true. This is true. This happened to me when I moved to Rochester in 1927. Rented that farm on Route 73 from John Lyon. It was Mr. McGowan, a kind of a retired fellow, and had a horse and one cow, lived right above me. And he was a wonderful farrier, blacksmith, and that, like, boy, he was Carker. And he had a little shop, but he retired, kind of, and just took his horse and used to go shopping to the horse. He always had a nice horse. And up just a little way beyond, there was a side road, went up to, and this old Civil War veteran, Senior, Alfred Senior, lived up there. So John's land that I rented the farm of told me, he says, I've done those two haying for him for several years. He said, they hired me to come up and cut the hay and put it in the barn for him. And he said, old Al Senior, an older man, he said, he drives a horse down, but he said he had to have a cane to walk around with. And so he said, they had to hire somebody to do it. So he says, they would like to have you do it if you want them. I said, well, I'll try and do it. So I referred July, and I finished up my hand there, and I spoke to, in the meantime, I spoke to McGowan, and he said, yes, when you get your done, he says, come up and cut mine. And then he said, I'll help you. He was able to do something. He said, I'll help you trim out around the fences and the apple trees with a hand scythe. And he said, I'll also help you do Alfred's. And he says, and that way he says, it wouldn't cost me so much to get mine cut if I help you. He said, I made arrangements with John. I said, well, whatever you've done with John, I'll do with you. So anyway, we went that day up to Senior's. And I went up in the morning, and the horse had the mowing machine, and he and the one had the little, I mowed all he had that forenoon with the horses, and I took dinner for the horses and took my dinner. And the first time that I would see Senior goodbye, but the first time I met him, he had on a white beard, was all stained up from smoking tobacco, and sat on a piazza, a little narrow piazza tail, and sloped a little. And so I went up on the piazza and said, I'll need my lunch. And Mr. Fairy there says to him, he says, up in beyond him is a little settlement, a lot of settlement, but somehow or other, I don't know why he called it the Corporation up there in West Rochester. Why some company or somebody owned the land and they'd cut the lumber off, called the Corporation. And of course, you cut the lumber off, it's always a lot of blackberries and raspberry bushes grow up. So McGowan was kind of he was an Irish fellow, he was kind of a character. He says to Senior, he says, tell Fuller about you going up into that big berry patch. Sometime he might like to go up in there and pick some berries. He said, there's still berries up in there, getting grown up, was what it was 2 years ago. Oh yes, he said, boy, he said, after about 2 years after that was cut off, he says, why, he said, the blackberries grew up there, great tall bushes, he said, and they had them, what we called sugar tit berries, long, and he said some of them was pretty as long as your little finger. Oh, sweet, he said, I took two gathering pails. A gathering pail are what you gather sap in there, which are more than bigger than an ordinary pail. So he said, I went up by this time with two gathering pails, and he said, I went in there and I picked. He said, no time at all, I had both them pails heaping full. And he said, so I hated to leave, but he said, the pail's full. So he said, I picked him up and turned around and started to walk out of the bushes. And when I turned around, he said, just a little ways from me was a bear in the bushes, standing up on her hind feet and her front legs folded down, looking at me. And I was taking it all in. I didn't know what kind of a guy. And of course, nothing said for a minute. And McGowan said, well, what'd you do, run? He said, run? How could I? With 6 foot of snow on the ground. That's what he told me. That's, I heard that right. Heard that. How could it was 6 foot of snow on the ground? And then he, did I tell you about his pig dying in a box for the rain?
Yes. I think driving the
come on the mountain, and they had that tight box with some slats on it. He never got a drop of water on his shirt on the Brandon Mountain, but when he went out to get the horse in, went out, the pig was drowned in the box. Oh, God.
Now, those two, I would imagine, would be stories told at the store.
Oh, yes, yeah. They'd tell him around the different places. You know, the old fellow would get out together and tell him, and I suppose they tried to see who could tell the biggest lie or something. And you know, to laugh about, you know. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, because you don't hear those kind of things anymore.
No, no.
And that's what I'm interested in doing with the general store, is getting some of these stories, and so that's a big help.
Yeah. And I say, they used to tell some, I don't remember them, but some of the horse stories they tell about how horse they, how quick they went to so many miles to town, you know, with a horse, which is outrageous, you know, a horse never could make it to that length of time. He might be able to, a portion of it in a mile, but when you go 5 or 6 miles, that horse can't keep up that speed for that. And how they expected people to believe that stuff, I don't know, but they used to, you have to throw a lot of that stuff around.
And I suppose horse trades, too.
Oh, yeah.
Were a big subject.
Yeah. And did I show you the picture of the big load of logs back in the early 1900s?
That huge, yeah.
Yeah. I showed it to you, didn't I? Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a true picture.
And feats of strength, I guess, took place at the store.
Oh, yeah.
Picking up a barrel. And
oh, yeah. Yeah. And it was, this is true, Frank Batchelor. He had a store up here in Braintree. He was a big rugged man. And it was told to me to be true, and I don't doubt it. A barrel of flour weighs 196 pounds. And a wooden barrel. And somebody bet him. He had stub teeth, they said, very strong. And they had the end of the barrel opened up to get the flour out. And they had a cover to set over, and they, you wanted to buy flour, you bought it by the pound, and put it in a paper bag. And somehow they bet him, it, or he bet that he could pick up that barrel of flour with his teeth. And the story goes, and if he was alive today, another one would back me up, was Perkins Flint, up here in Braintree. They said that fella bent over and shut his teeth on that barrel and raised it out on the floor, which is almost unbelievable, but they said that was a fact. Now, I don't know, I couldn't prove it, but that's the way it was told.
Boy, that is something.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Incredible.
Well, I know it. But that man was a rugged man, and they said that back years ago, he worked at one time on the railroad, and you take them barrel, wheelbarrows like on the railroad, iron, all iron and that like, and pushing them around, he could hang onto the handles, and when he come to want to go over the track, he could do the cat and that, he could, that out there, he could raise that thing, the wheels right up over, sort of right over the rail. Strength in his shoulders and arms.
Yeah, there are some stories of the strong man.
Yeah.
That there was another guy that carried a barrel of flour 4 miles home without setting it down, and it was straight uphill.
Yeah. And it's unbelievable, but some of them old fellas were. I know, I knew that man when I was moved over here, and I went down to the Raleigh route in 1936. He still, Frank Batchelor, still had the store up here in Braintree. And he was a, I'm telling you, a rugged, rugged man. And somebody broke into the store, and the store, they had a house in the joint, see? And he heard a racket, and he went out there in his, the people used to wear nightgowns, nightshirt, he went down barefoot, went out there, and he caught onto the fellow in the dark and held him till his wife could come to the light within a nightshirt, but he got his toe stepped on and had some sore feet, and that fellow was trying to get away from him, but they said when he once got hold of him, he held him until she got the light and got the phone and got the constable to come and take the fellow. He didn't get held there. But imagine going out in the dark and shackling onto somebody. She got... That was Frank Batchelor.
Now, did he run that store for a long time?
Yeah.